south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, we're back with the regular programming schedule now. That means we're back to two fresh new shows a week. Well, I don't know if they're fresh, but they're new anyway. But first, before we get into the meat of the show, you remember I was going to keep you up to date on the stem cell clinic progress. Remember I took my brother who was on 21 prescription medicines. He was 50 pounds overweight, couldn't walk two blocks without sitting down and taking a rest. He had been diagnosed by doctors up in the States with at least a dozen different maladies, which should have been way more than enough to get him down to a stem cell clinic to try to work that stuff out, especially with the severe arthritis that he had. But, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, the real reason why I got him to come down is because he was scheduled to get three joint replacements up in the States, two shoulders and a knee. And he, like most every American, was going to go through with it because insurance would pay. You know the drill. It's the go ahead, doc, as long as it doesn't come out of my pocket syndrome. Anyway, we got him down to this stem cell clinic in the DR that I just happened to stumble on. Place not at all widely publicized, and they only speak Spanish. Yet, they use all the modern, cutting-edge techniques the very expensive stem cell clinics that cater to gringos use. Better yet, if you need it, they do a detox before you get your stem cells, whereas the other big high-profile clinics that target gringos just don't do that, even though it can give the stem cells a much better chance at getting to the problem. Gringos, it seems, are always in a rush. They fly in, get their stem cells, and fly out. An impatient bunch, as gringos are. Am I right? But not at this stem cell clinic. Why? Because there's virtually no gringos going there. How could gringos and expats even find it? They've got no big marketing machine and their website's in Spanish. In fact, even after a dozen or so trips I made to the place to translate for my brother and stuff, people were always coming in and out. The place was fairly busy, but I never saw a single gringo. No marketing means no gringos, right? Of course, that also means, surprise, surprise, no gringo pricing either. Anyway, now that it's been 4 or 5 months, the results are in. My brother has dramatically improved. In fact, as I mentioned in a show about a month ago, for years, he hadn't been able to sleep at night without painkillers. His shoulders, which had been operated on many times before, bothered him so much, he had to take oxycodone every night for years. He said now, for the first time in years, he can go to sleep with no pain and no oxy. And the arthritis, he says, virtually gone. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about my other brother, my youngest brother, who was even worse off than the brother I've been speaking about. I haven't mentioned him much, but he's a much sadder case, if that's possible. Let me lay out part of his story. You're going to find this really interesting. You see, way back when, he was a power lifter in high school and college. Then, you know, as many sports guys do when they hit their 30s, it's all over. The young guys bump them off their pedestals. You know the drill. They slowly but surely quit working out, but they keep on eating those high-calorie portions, like they were still competing. Add that to the fact that back in the 80s and 90s, a lot of guys were taking steroids to bulk up, and they didn't know the negative secondary effects of those. Not like we do now, anyway. So after a few years of that, by the time he hit 40, he was 100 pounds overweight. A blimp. He started having health and cardiac problems and was told by a heart specialist that if he didn't lose that weight, he was headed for a heart attack. So guess what? Being that my brother has tremendous willpower when he wants to, he lost 100 pounds in 6 months. But even at his normal weight, he was tired, no energy, lethargic. Well, he went back to the cardiac specialist, had a bunch of tests done, and the doctor gave him the bad news. He said by him losing that 100 pounds so fast, he'd damaged his heart so much that he needed heart stents. I think he ended up having 12 stents. Definitely not good for a guy in his 40s, right? So anyway, 5 or so years went by, he kept his weight down, but still wasn't feeling so good. No energy, no stamina. So then, in his early 50s, he went back to the cardiologist and got more bad news. They told him his damaged heart's ejection fraction was only 31%. Now, the ejection fraction is a measurement doctors use to calculate the percentage of blood that leaves your heart each time it contracts, each pump of the left ventricle. Now, the normal range in men is from 50 to 70%, with a low, mildly abnormal range from 40 to 50%, with an abnormal range of 30 to 40% and a severely abnormal range at 30% or less. And once it gets into the mid or low 20s, often they'll put you on a heart transplant list. Nope, not good at all. And my brother's ejection fraction was at 31% and dropping. Even if your heart injection fraction is below 35%, your doctor will likely recommend a treatment like an implantable defibrillator or pacemaker. That's exactly what my brother was looking forward to. And his cardiologist told him if he drops into the 20s, he may end up on a transplant list. So things weren't looking good. And of course, you know, when you hear news like that, you get really depressed. And depressed people, well, that carries along with it its own set of physical and psychological problems. So anyway, about 6 months ago, I took him to the stem cell clinic. He got the maximum 300 million cell dose. Now, you might think you injected right into the heart. Well, they don't do that. It's by IV. And it only takes about an hour. And just now, 6 months later, he went back to his U.S. cardiologist, had his ejection fraction measured, and it was 51%. Yep, 51%. About a 60% improvement. That put him back in the low normal range. Remember, it was 31%. Well, guess what? His cardiologist was shocked. That stuff just doesn't happen, he says. And remember, he's got a dozen or so stents in his heart, too. Well, my brother told the doc he'd been to a stem cell clinic south of the border. But predictably, even seeing those fantastic results with his own eyes, the cardiologist said, is that right? I don't know. You got to look out for those clinics south of the border. Lots of scams down there. Yeah, right. Let's not go sending our heart patients south of the border now for treatments not approved by the corrupt FDA. That would upset the apple cart, cut into the doctor's bottom line. Who knows, if too many of his patients find out about that, the doc might risk getting behind on his Ferrari payments. Meanwhile, my brother's terribly weak heart is now normal, albeit normal on the low end of the scale, but still normal. Anyway, I just thought I'd give you a heads up on that because I just got the news from him yesterday. Anyway, speaking of the stem cell clinic in the DR, well, I spoke to the concierge lady yesterday, you know, the hand-holding translator lady that can make all the arrangements for you, pick you up at the airport, put you in a hotel, take you to every appointment, translate and hand-hold you through the whole thing. Remember, I mentioned in a previous show she'd be ready to start doing that on July 1st. Well, it's all set. Took some arranging, you know, nothing at that clinic is in English. It's all in Spanish. So all you guys and gals out there who've been inquiring about that clinic and how to go about organizing a trip there, as promised, she'll be sending you her details this week so that you could communicate with her directly. And for anyone else who's interested, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll pass the info on to her. Now, of course, if your Spanish is pretty good, you can come down here and do it all yourself. But if you don't know anything about the Dominican Republic and you've never been there before and you don't know where to stay, well, do note that there's some logistics involved. You'll be going back and forth to the clinic every morning for about a week. Could be more, could be less, depending on your treatment plan. And you'll be shooting off to a couple of different labs to get scans and blood work done as well. The thing is, you'll be in Santo Domingo, the capital of the DR, and it's a big city with 4 million people in the metro area. And the traffic really sucks, so it's pretty chaotic. Oh, and about the traffic, you know, I've been in almost every single Latin American country now, except, believe it or not, Suriname. And I thought Mexico and Guatemala had the worst drivers until I visited the DR. They have the absolute worst drivers that I've ever seen. Worse yet, they're very aggressive. I don't mean road rage aggressive. I mean bumper car kind of demolition derby style aggressive. For example, so far I've met two different people from the DR who bought a new car and got into an accident on that very same day. I know it sounds like a joke, like a bad comedy cliche, but it ain't. Now, you might see a viral internet piece about a guy who buys a car, drives off the lot, and smashes into someone. Aha, you think it never could happen to you or anyone you know. But I know two people it has happened to, both in the DR and just a couple of days apart. But I digress, as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about the stem cell clinic in the DR. Well, I'm just saying if your Spanish is pretty good and you're up for a little adventure, you could do it all yourself, taking taxis, Ubers, or even rent a car. Now, renting a car in the DR, I wouldn't recommend. Unless tienes huevos de acero, you have balls of steel. Or you can hire the concierge lady to drive you around and handhold you through the whole process. Or not. Either way, if you and yours have health issues and are interested in stem cells, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll pass the information on to her and I'll send you the link to the Stem Cell Clinic's website. Though again, it's all in Spanish. Unfortunately, they don't have a button on that site you can press for English. Then again, that's one of the reasons why you won't pay gringo prices. All right, speaking of bad traffic and terrible Latino drivers, sometimes, you know, a Latin government, a Latin bureaucracy, actually does something right for a change, something positive, something correct. Though often with any government, with first world governments too, good deeds only happen because of some kind of error or mistake. Because, you know, as a rule, governments and politicians are corrupt and retarded. They're reactive, not proactive. It's usually the case when they pass a law, it's because something bad has already happened and they're trying to correct it. Something bad the government itself had caused. Now, it's not that I'm for any new laws at all. We got way too many already, by a factor of 10. But here's a brand new one that actually makes sense, and it's coming from the country of Ecuador. I'll paraphrase this, as usual, to cut out the boring parts. It comes from the Spanish-language newspaper El Periódico. It starts off by saying, in an anti-crime move, the National Traffic Authority has outlawed adult male passengers riding on motorcycles. We're talking about Ecuador now. And man, you know, when I read this thing, I first thought it was an April Fool's joke. But it came out in June, so it can't be. It says, the National Traffic Agency announced Wednesday that motorcycles can no longer carry adult male passengers on public roads and highway. Wow, I can't believe it. Hip, hip, hooray. It says, according to Minister of Transportation Marcelo Cabrera, the new regulation is a response to the growing number of crimes committed by motorcyclists with a driver and a male passenger. All right, Mijan here. I wonder, where have you heard that before? Then it says, according to police, almost half of all the crimes against persons committed in Ecuador involve motorcycles with a driver and male passenger. It also says in some cities, more than 60% of the crimes are perpetrated by two men on a motorcycle, such as in the city of Guayaquil. Then it says, according to police reports revolving around homicides, 70% of all homicides in Ecuador involve motorcycles carrying a driver and a male passenger who's the shooter. And then it says, quote, these numbers have grown dramatically in the past 2 to 3 years, says Cabrera. We have also found, he says, 85,000 fraudulent licenses and registration documents during police roadside vehicle checks. And we know this is just a small fraction of the total. The situation is out of control, he says. We must have these new restrictions against male motorcycle passengers. Duh, you think? All right, again, me, Johnny here. Haven't I been telling you over and over again, even earlier in this podcast, that Latin American drivers are the worst I've ever seen? You've heard me mention on earlier shows that police will admit that less than 50% of all the motorcycle drivers throughout Latin America don't even have legal driver's licenses, and 25% of them don't have any paperwork or driver's license at all. Most of them know they can get away with it, too, because with those police roadside stops, a motorcyclist can spot that at least a block or so away. So they just turn and take a side street or whiz on past. And when they're flagged down and don't stop, the cops won't bother to chase them. It's not worth it. In fact, in all my years down here, I've never seen a cop involved in a high-speed chase of anyone. Anyway, to prove a point, yesterday while I was driving, two different motorcyclists were driving the wrong way on the one-way street I was driving in the correct direction, of course. Let me tell you what I do when that happens, and it happens often. Now, you might think I'm a dick, you might think I'm evil, but as they get closer to me, I swerve right into them. Of course, that scares the poop out of them. Nope, I don't hit them, I swerve away in time. But nearly always when I look back, they throw some pretty wild hand gestures at me. So is it fair? Is it just? Well, call me a jerk, call me an a-hole. Am I really teaching them a lesson? Do tigers change their stripes? Will popes stop wearing funny hats? Who knows? I kind of doubt it with the below room temperature IQs we're dealing with here. But in the moment anyway, it makes me feel good. But where were we? Oh yeah, back to the article. According to Marcelo Cabrera, director of the Ministry of Traffic, says, from now on, violators will be fined and their motorcycles confiscated. And in cases where weapons are found, violators will go to prison. Though he says there are exceptions to the no male passengers on a motorcycle rule. The exception is for families who have male children under 12. However, adult males, even if they are family members, cannot be carried as passengers on motorcycles. That's the new law. By the way, throughout Latin America, there's another unwritten, sort of implied transit law that says a motorcycle can carry no more than 12 kids, 3 dogs, and 4 tanks of propane. Hey, if you think I'm kidding, you ought to come down here and drive around for a while. By the way, speaking of crimes, I came across an article the other day that said throughout Latin America, about 80% of all the crimes go unreported. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? So if you're up in the States and you read something like that, you're thinking, who would want to live there? It's like the damn Wild West. But is it really? Let's analyze this a bit. So then why do 80% of the crimes go unreported? That's because the locals know the cops are lazy-ass slugs, and that unless a person's been caught red-handed, reporting a crime is just a waste of your time. Which reminds me of that old saying, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. But wait, there's more to this story. Get this, according to the U.S. 2019 Bureau of Justice Statistics, turns out it's not much different in the States. 59% of violent crimes in the U.S. are not reported either. And get this, 68.5% of U.S. property crimes are never reported as well. So, before you start calling the kettle black. All right, speaking of healthcare, well, at least we were speaking of healthcare with the stem cell thing earlier on. Anyway, closing my eyes and digging into the healthcare email stack comes this one. It's from Mr. D, who just ordered my Latin American healthcare report. You do know I've got a 100-page Latin American healthcare report that I wrote a while back, but updated it for 2022. It includes all the latest, greatest stem cell information, too. Anyway, if you want to get it, just go to expatplanb.com and click on the link. Anyway, Mr. D, who just got that report and I guess read it, sent me this email. He says, and I'll paraphrase this a bit. Much thanks, Johnny. Your Latin American healthcare report could not have come at a better time. He says, I'm currently on a low iodine diet in preparation for radiation treatment of my thyroid. He says this low iodine diet really sucks because everything here in the States is so overprocessed. I honestly can say the last time I was in Guatemala, we ate better, though the food would be considered basic by many standards. I don't hate it, though. Actually, I like the frijoles, tortillas, eggs, fresh fruits, and vegetables, etc. He says our plans are to look for a small house slash apartment in and around Antigua, Guatemala. Then he adds, Johnny, do you know any good contractors? As a side note, he says, we've been researching on how to possibly monetize documenting the work that will be done while building or remodeling a house. Though he says it'll start out as a hobby, who knows what it could turn into. All right, let me stop there for a second. You know, Mr. D, that's a really good idea. I can imagine just tons of gringos interested in anyone who's going through the process of building a house in Latin America. So I think if you started a YouTube channel, let's say entitled A Gringo's Guide to Building Your Dream House in Latin America, or something like that. Or you could call it What Not to Do When Building Your Dream House in Latin America. Depending on your perspective, I bet you'd have just a ton of subscribers. I don't think anything like that really exists right now. Meanwhile, so many people are getting a plan B going, getting the hell out of Dodge, and would like to do that. I meet people all the time, gringos and expats, who really want to build but don't want to reinvent the wheel. Anyway, I think that's a really good idea. Let's say you put out a 20-minute episode once a week. Hey, I'll watch it. I'll check it out. Now, as far as you're asking me if I know any good contractors, I assume in the Antigua, Guatemala area. Well, now is not the time. Ask me that question when you're ready to get started. Anyway, aside from that, he writes a bit more in his email. He says, Johnny, our plan will be to enable us to sign up for basic health insurance in Guatemala, while we still fall within the age requirements of the local insurance companies. Then he says, what I find interesting and maybe of note to your listeners, pre the COVIDia sham, in the States, of course, I live in Maryland. I was at a building checking on some of my folks and ran into a woman, a coworker, who was originally from Guatemala. And believe it or not, she noted that at least twice a year, she and her kids traveled back to Guatemala to visit her family doctor. She stressed that her appointments with her family doctor there were very in-depth and always took at least 45 to 90 minutes, something she never experienced here in the States. In fact, she noted that her and her family only used medical care in the States for the basics. Kind of scary and worrisome, if you ask me. She said she'd rather go to a developing country where a doctor would listen to what you were saying versus punching info into what's essentially a medical provider's version of WebMD. Then he says, don't get me wrong. While I like computers, my undergrad is in information systems. We human beings just aren't there yet with the online doctor thing, and I don't think it will be, at least in my lifetime. Then he finishes off by saying, you and Captain Mango stay safe now. Hang on to that Bitcoin and buy the dip when you can. It isn't just crypto. Blockchain technology is becoming bigger in government and private sectors all the time. Signed, Mr. D, from the Socialist Republic of Montgomery County, Maryland. Well, thanks for that, Mr. D. And you're certainly right about Bitcoin and crypto. Although we've had just a huge market blowout in the last couple days, man, no need to panic. I'll tell you, me, Captain Mango, Bitcoin Dan, Oscar Miner, Lawyer Jose, and a bunch of us other early adopters, to us, this recent crash is just a blip. We've seen the same kind of thing happen 10 or 15 times before. By the way, all you guys and gals out there who for the past year or two have been bragging about your staking gains on your tokens and shitcoins, you're licking your wounds now, aren't you? Some of you guys who were using leverage got wiped out, didn't you? You know, when people have asked my advice what to do if they're just getting into crypto, I'd always tell them, stick with the top five unless you're really into speculating. And unless you can stomach the fact that you might lose it all. Never get into leveraging. But of course, everyone asks for advice, but they don't listen. In the crypto world, you have to get burned a couple of times before you learn your lesson. My best advice for anybody getting into crypto is spend about 10 hours learning just about the blockchain and Bitcoin. Best book to read, it's called The Bitcoin Standard. That'll get you off to a roaring start, and that'll be your 10 hours right there. By the way, if you want to copy that book, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, since we're digging into the email pile, comes this email from Dave. Yep, another Dave, another dollar. Or something like that. He says, Johnny, just putting some of the pieces together regarding your show. After listening to some vintage Art Bell broadcasts from Coast to Coast AM, I sense a distinct influence in on-air vocal cadence with you and your show. And that show title of yours, The Expat Files, seems derivative of the X-Files TV show of the 90s. So then, Johnny, can we assume you share a skepticism of government and a libertarian worldview based on those influences? Am I onto you, or am I reading too much into it? By the way, what number do I call from east of the Rockies? Anyway, love the show. Keep it up. All right, Dave, thanks for that. And as far as the answers to those questions, yes, 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 and harumph, Nevada. By the way, I get emails once in a while from people asking me if there's any truth to the stories that bad guys and gals will spike your drink with drugs at certain bars, discos, and nightclubs in Latin America. Now, you may have heard about that drug scopolamine. It's been called the Twilight drug. Puts you into a kind of a twilight stupor. Turns out, in World War II up to the Vietnam War, militaries used it as a kind of a truth serum when they captured the enemy. Now, as for those rumors, I personally have never heard of any cases coming out of Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador. However, I've heard a few first and second-hand stories of spiked drinks leading to robberies or worse, happening in places most exclusively on the Gringo Tourist Trail, like in Cancun, Costa Rica, Panama City, certain cities in Colombia, and now, just this week, in fact, and that's why I'm bringing this up, in Cuenca, Ecuador. Why does it seem this kind of stuff always happens on the Gringo Tourist Trail, never off? Again, you have to assume the bad boy locals on the Gringo Tourist Trail see the Gringo expats and tourists as just people with dollar signs tattooed on their foreheads. So listen up as I read from this article that just came out from, once again, Ecuador's largest newspaper. The title's in Spanish, of course. It starts out, En Cuenca, delincuencia opera con escopolamina. Translation, in Cuenca, crime operates with the drug scopolamine. It says there have been some robberies using scopolamine in the past few days, with the most recent case reported last Friday afternoon at Calles Mariscal Lamar and Manuel Vega, where three people were found unconscious on the sidewalk. Passersby who found them called 911, and the Cruz Roja, that's Red Cross, and the fire department arrived and took two of them to the Vicente Corral Moscoso Hospital. The third person was awake and did not require hospitalization. The victims reported all three had been drinking at a bar when they were approached by a man who asked them about an address on a piece of paper. Next thing they knew, they were out in the street, nauseous, semi-conscious, missing their phones, money, and valuables. In another incident that occurred in the city the next day, the victim was approached by a person who touched his shoulder and arm and asked him how to get to a certain place. Then, feeling a bit drugged and out of it, he went with the man to an ATM machine, took out $500 and gave it to the guy. The article goes on to say two expats were also victims of scopolamine robberies in April and May. Both single men reportedly had drinks with a woman in Guayaquil. One of the men invited two other women to his apartment and then reported he was robbed of his computer, cash, cell phones, and small kitchen appliances while he was unconscious. The second man says he drank with a lady from Guayaquil at a local bar and woke up the next morning on the banks of Riotobamba River, missing his wallet and cell phone. Moral of the story, when you're out at the bars, keep a close eye on your drink. Oh, and by the way, that's why it's always a good idea to order something that comes in a bottle or can. Then drink it out of that bottle or can. Don't pour it into a glass, because that's an open invitation to hanky-panky, especially in the low light of a bar or disco. Worse yet, later in the night after you've had a few. Oh, and another little tip. When you get that bottle or can, you open it yourself. Don't let them open it for you. I've seen this happen, for example, in Medellin, Colombia. We were in an average local restaurant, and a guy with me ordered a bottle of that Pellegrino water, you know, that's imported from Italy. Because it's imported, like Perrier water, I guess it must have cost $3 or $4. Anyway, the waiter brought it over and popped the top, and my friend took a drink, but realized something was wrong. He said, Pellegrino water has tiny little bubbles, like Perrier water, just ever so slightly carbonated. Oh, it was carbonated, all right, it fizzed, but with gigantic bubbles like a Canada Dry club soda, which, by the way, down here is about 50 to 75 cents. So in that case, it wasn't like scopolamine. No one was trying to drug anyone. It was just a switcheroo, a bottled water switcheroo, a cheap brand for an expensive one. So again, even when you order bottled water, make sure you open it yourself. And if someone, the waiter, the bartender, or someone in the kitchen already cracked the top, tell them you pop your own tops. You want another one. By the way, speaking of gringos and expats getting rolled by bad boys and girls, you know, I don't have any sympathy at all for idiot gringos and expats who come down with all their bling and flash money around in bars and discos. They're just asking for it. And that, too, almost exclusively happens on the gringo tourist trail. You know, a lot of young 20-something guys come down to Cancun, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, just looking for a quick hookup. They'll go to a bar, flash some cash and bling, buy drinks for a local girl or two, and you know how that turns out. By the end of the night, the guy and his buddies are slashed. They take the girls back to the hotel. Somewhere along the line, things go missing. The show-off tourist boys in question were asking for it. They didn't even need to get drugged to get rolled.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!